Welcome to Deep Dive Genre. Director and writer Peter Torwart already made numerous short films on Super 8 and video growing up in Unna, at the edge of the Ruhr area. His 1996 short film, Was nicht passt, wird passend gemacht, which he realized while still at the HFF Munich, earned him numerous nominations and awards, including a nomination for the Student Academy Award in 1997, a nomination for the German Short Film Award, and the Silver Plaque at the Chicago Film Festival. Peter's 1999 feature debut, Bang Boom Bang, is now considered a cult film. His second feature, a long version of Was nicht passt, wird passend gemacht, was awarded the Jupiter for the best German film. He co-wrote the screenplay for Die Welle with his friend director Dennis Gansel. The film screened at Sundance in 2008, received a German Film Award, and attracted over 2.5 million viewers to theaters. Over the years, Peter Torwart has developed and written numerous screenplays with Stefan Holz, Blood Red Sky among them. After 16 years of preparation, his passion project premiered on Netflix in July 2021. Blood Red Sky was streamed in 190 countries and number one in 57 of them. Peter's follow-up, Blood and Gold, was released on the streamer in April 2023. We talked to Peter via video call for this interview. Hi, Peter.
Hi. Hi, Christine.
Thank you so much for sitting down with us today. Nothing has done a better job in recent years to bring the horror genre back into the mainstream spotlight here in Germany than your film Blood Red Sky, which was number one in the Netflix streaming charts in, I don't know, 57 countries or probably more.
It was 57, but number two in Germany, but worldwide it was number one, as you mentioned, in 57 countries. And yeah, it was a huge success, but in Germany we did good, but not as good as worldwide.
I'll be asking a few general genre questions, but mainly I'd really want to talk with you about your film and the creative choices you made. Did you actually want to tell a horror story, or did you want to tell that specific story?
I wanted to tell the specific story. I don't think Blood Red Sky is a horror movie. It comes along as a horror movie, but actually it's not a horror movie because our heroine is the vampire. And there are horror elements in the movie, but it's not a horror movie. I would say Backbone is a drama. Mm-hmm. It's a mother and son story, and this is the backbone of the story. It has the DNA of a classic action movie like Die Hard. Yeah. So we have a contained venue, and something happened in there. There are some terrorists, and she is just not John McClane. She is Nadia. And side story, she is a vampire. So she has to use her special skills to fight those guys. And this is actually the story. And there are only some elements in the story which are more taken from the horror movie. And this, but maybe we talk about this later. I would say these are the flashbacks.
Mm-hmm. Because you just mentioned Nadia and her son. Was it always that specific constellation? Mother and son?
No. I have to admit, first of all, we started different. You know, it has a very, very long history. We started, my co-writer, Stefan Holz, and I started to develop this story 2006. At this time, so I became father very late, 2014. So first of all, the story was more orientated, a little bit like, I would say, From Dusk Till Dawn. So we like this surprising moment when suddenly it turns out she's a vampire. And before I came father myself, I had the idea there's something missing in the story, and this is a dramatic story. So there was a little boy on board, but it was not her son. Suddenly, I think it must have been 2008 or something, I was running, and when I'm running, my brain works different, I don't know, and I came up with the idea, we are missing a point here. If she is a mother, so the story would be much more emotional. Mm-hmm. Then I called Stefan, and he didn't know, and said, yeah, but then we have to do a new story. I said, not actually, we can take elements. But it developed this way, and I think it was good. So the long process of developing the story and get it financed later on, it all makes sense at the end.
Okay. Well, I still have to wonder how you guys never gave up, because I mean that is just quite a long time to
Yeah,
stick with a
so we
project.
had other projects as well. So it was not just this project. We worked over and over again. And Christian Becker, of course, he was supporting us, although he didn't like the story,
Okay.
the first draft. And then we gave him the second draft, and it was not his cup of tea, actually. So he somehow understood and he trusted me, but it was not his. He would have liked it better if it was like this From Dusk and Dawn story and with a
Yeah.
little bit more gimmicks. But after he has seen the final movie, he said, "Now I got it." So he never believed in this emotional strength the story
Huh,
has.
interesting.
But at the end, when he saw the movie, I said, "Okay, now you got me." Yeah.
At the start of the movie, obviously, there's this eerie shot where Elias upsize from the plane, and then we see this small child with a stuffed animal, which obviously has an important part later on. For me, not only did that suck me in as a viewer, for me, that also actually established Elias as the hero, because you earlier mentioned that Nadia is the heroine. And a lot of the reviews also said that's a story of a mother's love for her child. And Benjamin actually mentioned, he said, well, it's for him, it might be the story of Elias and of the engineer as well. I forgot his name. And so I
It's
was
Fahid.
wondering, Fahid, so I was wondering how you see it now that the film has been out for a while.
I would say it's both, actually. And I think at the midpoint, it starts to change. So you was talking about the frame story. So it
Yeah.
starts with totally a different style. It's more like an action thriller. It's how the story starts. And I know people who said, okay, they didn't like it because now we know this plane is landed at the end and we know how it ends somehow. But it's not about this. I think it's more, as you said, there is it's a suspense moment. Okay, what happened to the boy? And we see the whole story through the eyes of the boy. But then we just cut back how the story started. And I would say, at the beginning of the story, it's more her story. So she's on the plane. She has to take care about her son. On the other hand, he takes care about her as well. I would say a strange way. He behaves a little bit more like an adult. What I like, because we have this special thing about him. And in the middle of the story, when she has to reveal her superpowers, I say, then I think the drama comes into play, and this is when the boy starts to get the heroine of the story. I think it's changing, like Fargo, for instance. I would say the guy who is hiring the killers, he is the main character for the first half, and then she comes into the story. I think this happens very late in the first act, at the end of the first act, and then she becomes the main character. And they hand it over, and it's happening here a little bit the same way.
And the reviews mentioned the vampire part of the story. So when you started, well, at least when I started watching it, you kind of knew what to expect, but still there's this nervous undercurrent when you watch it until the reveal happens. And you mentioned the backstory or the flashbacks earlier. How was the decision made how much of the backstory you wanted to show? Because I heard that there was some sort of discussion with Netflix.
It was not a big discussion, so we were on the same page because we wanted to keep the secret that she is a vampire as long as it's possible. And I think it's necessary because then she is going to be introduced as a mother. As a mother with a certain kind of illness. And it could be leukemia or something, but she's treating herself with a medicine. And I think we want to get the audience who are not fan of horror movies. And we didn't want to fuck them up by showing, revealing at the beginning it's a vampire story. And somehow, even if you know it's a vampire movie because of the trailer or what else, I think the circumstance that she is get introduced as a real person, this definitely helps to root for her. I think this was very important. And then I think it's the first act, it's more like, she is care about the son. He is behaving some kind weird. Then the plane is taken over by those guys, and when she gets shot, I think this is really, really tough because we know it's she's his mother. And then we have shown the first flashbacks, and it didn't tell too much. Mm-hmm. But the first flashback, and this is a very interesting, because after the movie was released on Netflix, you know, they have the algorithm, and he can analyze everything. So I think you don't need an algorithm to realize, okay, where we have a little drop off. So basically, we had a very high amount of completers who watched almost 90% or all the way through. But there were some little drops when it comes to the flashbacks. Hmm. And Netflix told me later on, Netflix doesn't work because it's disturbing the fluent story. And I had made another experience because I was questioning friends of mine, and there were some who told me, oh, you know what, when it came to the flashbacks, it was just too tough for us. We had to switch it off because we was afraid. It was really scary because then the movie turns to a horror movie. She is the mother, and there is something in the woods, and the car breaks down, and then she is going to this abandoned place, to this cottage, and this is a horror movie because there is a threat somewhere, and she is our heroine. And when this happens on the plane, it's different. So she is the action hero who has to fight the villains, and the villains, they are no vampires. But this was a switching.
Plus, it's a different pace as well, you know, because it's suddenly it's a little bit slower, at least, you know, than the action sequences. So I think it people is. Can be thrown by that as well, in addition to the horror element.
It can be. And we lost only a little amount of viewers. But I would say, you cannot think like that. Maybe much more people stayed watching the movie because of the flashbacks. Mm-hmm. And this is what the algorithm cannot show you. It enriches the movie, those the flashbacks. Mm-hmm. And we still only tell parts of her backstory. And I think it's very important to know where is she from and how she became a vampire. And her relationship with a little baby, it's so heartbreaking because she doesn't want to be evil, but something happens to her. And I think this is definitely necessary for the story.
Now that we're talking, I'm actually wondering, how aware is Elias of what exactly is going on with his mom? Because I don't think that's, you're getting into the specifics of that in the film, if I remember
correctly.
It's
a good question, actually, because I was asked this many times. And my interpretation is he knows she is a vampire, but he doesn't know what it means. Mm-hmm. So he has never seen her in action. He has never seen her transformed. So I think he knows, okay, my mother cannot stand the sunlight, and there's something wrong about her, and she must not drink blood. But he doesn't know what it is with all the consequences. And this is what he realizes on the plane. So he knows about her. He knows everything. But he doesn't know how far this can go. She has to go all the way because she's making a decision. Okay, she says, okay, now I have to reel my superpowers because I have to fight those guys because I want to save my little kid. But at the end, it means I'm becoming a threat for the little boy as well. And she knows that. Yeah. And this is what makes it dramatic.
You cast two well-known international actors, Graham McTavish of Outlander fame and Dominic Purcell, which I heard he was the sort of stand-in in the concept for a long time. Yeah. How hard was it to find Peri Baumeister and Karl Anton Koch? I heard that you had initially, Benjamin mentioned that you had initially a different young boy for the role.
Yeah, we have a different young boy, and he was somehow different. So first of all, I'm very glad that we went with Karl Anton Koch because he was just gorgeous. But he was not our number one choice. There was another boy, and his parents were very worried about the story. So they were visiting us in Prague two times, actually. I was sitting down with them together, and they said, yeah, we don't know, it's a tough story. I said, I know. And I'm a father myself, and definitely we don't want to harm the boy. So we are taking care about everything. And I think we did a fantastic job later on. But they still were, so then they said, okay, now we know you and we have a good feeling about this. Then they left and they called me 2 days later. And actually, we had this we wanted to do everything right because we were shooting in Germany. We wasn't supposed to engage a, how do you call it, a medienpädagogische Beratungskraft.
Okay.
She was responsible for everything. And I take this serious. So I think it's really something I was thinking about very, very long ago. And we wanted to do this movie, you know, for quite a long time. And I was contacting such a person a long time before and asked her about, okay, do you think a little boy can do that? And said, if you have the right approach, it's possible. And I was taking this very seriously. But this woman, she refused to read the script. And she read it 3 weeks before we were shooting. And she even refused to talk to me, which was crazy because it's a really, really necessary point. So, okay, to make a long story short, at the end, the parents, they had a bad feeling about this. And I said, I told them, you know what, then don't do it.
Yeah.
Because you have to feel right. It was tough for the little boy because he wanted to do it. He really wanted to do it, and he was devastated. But we have to accept that.
Yeah.
And the good thing is we had this other family, and Karl Anton Koch, his father is a singer at the opera. Mm-hmm. His mother is a dancer, so they are artists herself.
Yeah.
He has three younger brothers, two of them, maybe now three, I'm not sure, but two of them are acting as well.
Okay.
So they know how it works. I was contacted them and said, you know what, okay, let's sit down. Okay, you have to make sure that the boy is educated, that is, there's someone who takes care about him. It was actually his uncle. He was working at the theater in Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
He was there as a coach. He coached him all the time. He had a young teacher. She was perfect. She was there all the time. And we never extended his shooting time on set.
Mm-hmm.
So we made it also. We had two doubles for when he was in the background,
yeah,
or when we just saw the back of his head and everything. And it worked perfectly. And he was so much part of the team. He was there when the vampires were the special makeup artist,
yeah,
Mark Huya, who is a great star. He won 2 Oscars. He was doing the makeup and everything. I knew all about this. And he was on a Montessori school and they were supporting him. I said,
mm-hmm,
okay, he can take his time. Everything is no problem. And he had a camera and was taking pictures all the time. And his job was doing like an internship. He was
okay.
doing documentation of the whole
yeah.
movie. And later he got an A for doing this. And he was, of course, learning English. He was doing his homework. He was on set. And for us, it was always tough because he wanted to be longer. And I said,
mm-hmm,
sorry, but you are not allowed. Go out,
no.
play. We were shooting. We built this this plane on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And outside of this big hall where we shot the movie, it was summer. So he had to go out with his teacher and play and everything. So I think it was definitely no problem at all. And when it came to the very, very violent scenes, we shot it that he wasn't part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So always find a great solution. It wasn't scary for him at all.
Yeah.
I think the most important thing to work with children actors is you have to make sure that you don't treat them as stars.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think this is the biggest problem. If they... he is a star. He did a great job and he was very professional. I'm still in contact with the family and I'm very confident that we did a good job.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Peri Baumeister.
Yeah.
Given that she had to do quite a lot of stunts, how much prep time did she have?
We casted her very lately because, first of all, we did 3 rows of auditioning with lots of really, really great actress, and they gave it all. It was really perfect. But till at the end, there were 4 actresses I really liked, and I wanted to discuss them with Netflix. And very, very late, Peri was available because another TV show she did was stopped
late
by Netflix.
Or, yeah.
Yeah. Too bad for them, but it was great for us. She came, she was just perfect. We had quite a lot of time. We went to Prague. We shot the movie in Prague. And it was tough for her because she is a mother herself,
mm-hmm,
and a single mom. So there was a nanny taking care of her little daughter. But it was so tough for her. But she was unstoppable. It was really crazy. When it comes to the aid of fate, she did everything herself. Mm-hmm. Maybe she was in one or two stunt team. We have had a double, but she wanted to do it all. And I tried to stop her when we were training and when it comes to the shooting and we did some rehearsals. I said, oh, Perry, you know what? It's just a rehearsal. Please do only 50%. But she is not the actress. She cannot do it like this. She has to go the whole way. And she did it perfectly. And I know it was tough because it took her at least 5 hours in the makeup and 1 hour to remove the makeup again and shoot in between and her daughter. And this is what I am a little bit angry about is... that she didn't get the props she deserved for doing this movie. For me, I don't do movies for getting awards or something. I just do my movies, which I like. And but for her, I don't know. She just deserved it because it's not only her physical acting. On the other hand, because to touch the audience in an emotional way, she did. I know what she did, and it was such a perfect job, and no one realized this later on. That's really bad. Maybe the audience did, but not the Academy, not the TV guys. Yeah. So it's maybe it's because of Netflix, because it's just in between, but it was outstanding what she did.
Well, also because it's this action horror film that's a very mainstream popular film, and these films always have a hard time getting recognition. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah, it's like that. I can tell you, I wrote the screenplay for The Wave. I wrote it in 2 weeks. And for this, it took us years for Stefan Holz and I writing this script because it's so complicated because it's in this contained environment and it's like playing chess. So you have those characters and he is there but he cannot move there, and it was so complicated technically. It's a total different thing, but
absolutely. Talking about technical stuff, because you mentioned that you shot in it was a full-sized airplane replica.
We took the interior of an airplane, but we built it on stage. So the fuselage, the outside shape of the it wasn't there. We mostly with visual effects later on, CGI, but the interior was actually an old Boeing. Yes, it was an old Boeing, but we dressed it because we had the special thing with the stairs going down, which only has the Airbus 340. But our art designer, Uwe Stanek, he did a fantastic job together with the crew in Prague. Everything was perfect for us, and we had some walls we got rid of, but actually we didn't use that often because we always tried to find angles with a camera which are possible on a plane. We didn't want to remove a wall and shoot use a long lens shot from the outside to shoot inside, because we always wanted to create the atmosphere. We as an audience are part of the crew or the passengers. And we are on board on the plane. And Yoshi Heimrat, who was a DOP, he did a great job. And I'm very pleased with the result.
Yeah, I mean, watching it, I was really surprised because you managed to make it look fresh every scene, even though you know it's the same plane and you've probably seen bits and pieces of these angles before. It never looked boring.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Talking about the camera concept just for a moment. We started to, we have those design shots at the stage shots at the beginning of the story, but the more the action takes over, we switched on handheld camera and the concept changed a little bit, but we always wanted to be part of the passengers.
Yeah, because I was wondering which action scene was the hardest to shoot and why?
Probably it's the final fight, her against 8-Ball, and I think we could have done better. I think it's okay right now, but it's not there where I wanted it to be. So this was one of my conclusions when we came to shooting the next movie. Just took a little bit more time to stage those action sequences. I think one step further would be great, but it's fine as it is right now.
Well, I mean, I liked it. I didn't notice anything, but you've probably seen that scene a million times. So you see it absolutely differently. You mentioned the makeup earlier, the vampire makeup for Perry.
Yes.
And there are sort of the vampire romanticizing films, but this is not one of them. They're more like Nosferatu-like creatures. How did the creative process behind that look come about? Did you guys already decide when you wrote the script, you and Stefan Holz, or did that come up later, what that would look like?
Basically, the idea was, because it's her inner fight, what we wanted to show. So we wanted to be the vampire is really scary because it's her dark side, yeah, which is now shown in a visual way. Wanted to show, okay, this is, it's a process. It's the turning into a vampire doesn't happen with a blink of an eye. It has to feel very natural.
Yeah.
And later on, we had this great guy, Mark Hulia, coming on board. He won 2 times the Oscar for, I think, Harry Potter and Grand Budapest Hotel. And the most important thing, he is such a talented and really, really nice guy. Mm-hmm. And I was so proud because he was ignited when I told him about the story. And so, you know what? This is definitely something I want to do. And he came with his ideas and it was perfect. So the idea was, okay, we couldn't afford to do face replacement, CGI stuff. Yeah. So we decided to go with this prosthetic stuff he did, which was great. And just at the very end, at the last stage of her vampire being, we supported it a little bit with CGI. So we made her mouth bigger, her ears a little bit, the distance between the eyes, we widened it a little bit. What is just not possible with prosthetics and special makeup. So, but we always wanted to have this creature like an animal. So without the supernatural powers, it's just superhuman strength. Mm-hmm. So, when I talked to our fight designer and action choreographer, I told him, okay, it's not supernatural vampire. They cannot crawl on the ceiling. They have to be like fast predators. Mm-hmm. And this is what we wanted to do, yeah.
Okay. And because you mentioned the mouth, was that broken, uneven voice that Nadia has when she's fully given into her vampire cravings, was that an active creative choice or was that due to the prosthetic teeth? I was wondering.
I think it was both. As of course, she was capable of doing her lines with those false teeth in, but it sounded a little weird. And later on, when we did the sound mixing, our sound designer, he used some plugins to make it sound a little bit more animal-like, but it helped us, definitely.
Okay. Music.
Yes.
Music is without doubt very important for the atmosphere of a film, especially so if you have some very suspenseful moments or action moments. How involved were you in the score of the film? And was there anything that you wanted specifically or maybe didn't want?
We didn't want an action-driven soundtrack.
Okay.
It's more like the soundtrack should support, of course, the action, but concentrate on the emotional backbone of the story. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't know Dasha Nauer at this time, but she was recommended by Sascha Bühler from Netflix. Mm-hmm. And so Dasha came on board and it was just perfect. It was actually, I met her the first time as a real person when we did the dubbing in Berlin because it was pandemic. So we did everything remote and it was just great. She understood everything and it was just sitting next to her working on those soundtracks. And she came with the idea using this, is it called cello? Yes, right?
Mm-hmm. Cello,
the instrument.
Yeah.
This very, very bass sound of the cello and doing the tunes and with this electronic beats. And I think I heard it and I was big fan and she just hit it, so it was perfect.
Yeah, because I thought it worked really, really well, because sometimes it can happen that suddenly you're watching a film and you notice the music. Obviously shouldn't happen ideally, and that was not the case. It just really supported the story on screen. I have a light question, because obviously you shot inside an airplane, you shot at night. I'm assuming there were a lot of discussions how you light the scenes. And I was wondering, were there any particular challenges in regards to the lighting for you and the team? Can you still see something when you try to, you know, have an atmosphere of night and of suspense in a way?
So it's a vampire movie, and so I think working with light is it's very necessary. So yeah. We had a concept, and first of all, we had to use the sun as, I would just say, as a character, because mm-hmm. The sun is so important for the movie, yeah. And there are not much scenes which takes place in the sunlight. And basically, it's only this one scene when Nadia, and her husband at this time, or the father of the little boy, are doing the snowball fight. This is the only scene which actually takes place in the sunlight and in the mm-hmm. very end when the sun comes up again. So we used this for dramatic reasons, and this was very important. Mm-hmm. And then on the plane, because we only have the plane and we don't want it to make it look all the time the same. So we were thinking, and our DOP, Yoshi, was experimenting with the light he had in the plane. So we built it all. It was all available light. We used this spotlights for heart shapes, and we used this ambient light to, mm-hmm. to create the atmosphere in the plane. And you even lose the soft backlight of the monitors to ignite the faces and everything. Mm-hmm. And he was, I think, experimenting for 3 days before we started shooting with all the atmospheres he can create. And the good thing was, it was all be manageable from, it was like a DJ on his
a
mix board something, yeah. So it was everything there, and he could control everything, and he was just perfect. So he did tests, and then we said, okay, this might be perfect for this situation. Then when the plane is going into the diving mode, and then we have an emergency light and everything, the whole paintwork on the plane, it was gray and mm-hmm. a little bit darker than it is in an official place, just to keep the atmosphere moody and down. And we had those big ambient LED lights, so we could create every color, and then everything was programmed, and when it came to shooting, it helped us also with being fast mm-hmm. while we were shooting, because we just switched it to, okay, now back to situation A, and we had everything, and everything was stored into the sport, and then mm-hmm. we just shot with a handheld camera. The only thing we had to take care of, that because there were all the lights, so yeah. The camera or the DOP didn't create its own shadow, but yeah, this was not a big thing.
Manageable.
Yeah.
Given that it's been, I don't know, a 16-year journey to get Blood Red Sky made, was there any particular scenes that you shot that you were sorry to have to cut? You know, if you spend that much time with a story and with a script,
it's so funny because I think we worked in such a clever way. So later on, Christian Becker asked us, because he wants to save all the extended scenes mm-hmm. or the deleted scenes, maybe later on he could bring out a DVD or a Blu-ray or something, and the area told him there's nothing. So mm-hmm. we use everything. There's only one little scene we got rid of, but it's not worth mentioning it. It just, I would say, 20 seconds or something. Okay. Of course, we condensed it a little bit, but there is not big chunks of the movie missing right now. So everything is in there.
Okay. I have a few questions about you. You've been working as a director and a writer for quite a while now. How has the job, or your perception of the job, changed over that time, if it has changed at all?
Hopefully it hasn't changed, because I started with all my energy, and it definitely, I'm doing the movies I want to see on screen. Somehow it works better, but for me, shooting and developing the story and everything, it's so much my passion definitely. So and hopefully I can keep this passion going. Hopefully, of course, the movie making changed over the years. We started when we did the first movie, it was like bang, boom, bang. I think the movie conveys how we felt at this time when we made the movie. It's, it was so much us, but now it gets even more professional. You have to be much more effective and everything, but we are doing, or I hope I'm still doing it with the same passion. And hopefully I never lose this.
Yeah. Benjamin, when I talked to him, mentioned that you have a tendency for your characters to stay basically the same. He said, you know, Peter writes scripts where the characters start out and they're being confronted with something and they start questioning themselves like, oh, maybe, you know, maybe we should change. Maybe there is something about us that doesn't fit. But he says, and usually in the end, they stay the same and they realize we were perfect the way we were from the beginning. Would you agree with that assessment?
I have to think about this.
Sorry to put you on the spot. And he specifically mentioned Bang Boom Bang for that.
Yeah, in Bang Boom Bang, it's something different because there are those guys sitting in the laughing their asses off at the end, and they didn't change at all, which I think is somehow this was perfect for the story. So they didn't even realize that they were fucked over by the girl. Mm-hmm. But
and he thought for Blood Red Sky, he mentioned, he said, because Elias, you know, he's the same good-hearted kid. Well, obviously he lost his mother, but he's the same person. And he said Farid is the same person as well. I mean, he's a good guy.
Yeah, but I think, of course, he is a good guy and he stands for the good in the story. He is not corrupted at all. So I think she is a little bit responsible because what happened on the plane, because it was her decision, because the old vampire told her she cannot fight it. Mm-hmm. So the evil is stronger than her and she didn't want to know. So that she killed the old vampire and wanted to go on with her life. And her hope was that she can treat it. But at the end, everything turned out as the old vampire told her. So I think she is a little bit responsible. Not that I won't blame her for that, because I can understand that.
Yeah.
So and Elias was always the only really good character in the script. But he stands for the pure good. Yeah, maybe character-wise, he's not changing. It's not a coming-of-age story where you, the end, realize, okay, life is going on and I have to be a grown up right now. I have to think about this, what Benjamin said, because it's I have done some more movies, but yeah, maybe it's like that. I cannot tell you this right now.
Okay.
He analyzed this. I have to think about this.
All right. You mentioned your frequent script writing partner, Stefan Holz. I was wondering if you would share with us, how does your collaboration work for other projects as well? Do you brainstorm together and then each of you writes on your own? Do you write together?
So it's changing over the years. Good thing is, I think we are the perfect team. So I am the one with the crazy ideas and I have mostly the vision, but he is much more patient as I am. Mm-hmm. I would say he is I mean this in a good way, he is a machine. So he sits down and is just writing, and he always knows when I'm not right and say, okay, we have to think about this again. I cannot concentrate for a long time as he can. What really helps me is developing the story and brainstorming. It's so much fun doing this as a team and kicking ideas back and forth and just sitting there. I'm not a writer. I'm sitting there, and if you have writer's block, it's just frustrating. It's a great joy if you are inspired and everything, and then it just flows. But developing a story, it's so much more fun to do this as a team. And it started actually before Bang Boom Bang. I read the script of Stefan when I was at film school, and I really liked it. And then I get the chance to do a TV pilot for a TV series, which never got made.
Okay.
And I had an idea for the script, and I said, we don't have much time. Stefan, you have to help me out. And it worked so great. And we were arguing sometimes, but it's never about ego. It's always who has the best idea. And
it's about the
either
story.
One can convince the other one. And this changed over the years. So with Bang Boom Bang, it was like we were running. I had lots of crazy ideas, but I couldn't put them together as a story. Then I asked him, Stefan, you help me out. And Christian wanted the guy at this time. I was in Copenhagen, where my girlfriend at this time lived. And he was sending Christian Becker. Mm-hmm. Was sending Stefan to Copenhagen, and I think we were running around the town for a week and telling us over and over again the story till we had it all. Okay. And then he made some notes, and I was writing the script, and then I think it was one of the first emails I ever sent. We emailed it to Munich, to Indigo Film Production at this mm-hmm. time, and they were just checking it for typos, and this basically was our first script. It developed later on, and it was a long process, because in the editing room later on, we realized, okay, it was our first movie, and this scene was way too long, and mm-hmm. we didn't need the introduction, and this was, so we had to condense it, and we had several reshoots, but only little reshoots, sometimes yeah. only close up to make a scene shorter and everything, to bring the movie in shape. And I think over the years, we became more and more efficient. So as I told you with Blood Red Sky, or even my last movie, Blood and Gold, we really used nearly every shot. So it was very, very efficient. And I didn't write Blood and Gold. Mm-hmm. This was another writer who also is a friend of mine. We developed the story together, but he did the writing. And with Stefan Holz right now, funny thing is we recently wrote two scripts mm-hmm. at the same time. He was writing one and I was writing the others. And we were telling us all the time and did the brain work together. And it was sitting on one table and it worked out. So both scripts are done right now. Hopefully we get it financed. And Stefan, over the year, because he is also writing as a very established writer right now and working as a writer mm-hmm. and he became more and more confident, which is good. So right now it's a little bit more of discussing, but still it's never about ego, it's just about whatever works best.
And that was it. Thank you so much for sitting down with us today.
Yeah, thank you very much, Christine.
It was a pleasure.
Deep Dive Genre is produced by German Films. The National Information and Advisory Center for the Promotion of German Films Worldwide. To find out more about our guests, check out the links in our show notes. To stay up to date with our episodes, subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.